Welcome everybody, and we welcome you to this week's 5-Minute Update, where we examine the news from the last week and relate it to major Bible prophecies of the end of days, where we focus on the prophecies that the nations would divide the land of Israel, Joel chapter 3 verse 2, and the city of Jerusalem, Zechariah in chapter 14 and verse 2, which will result in the judgment of the nations. Now, the judgment of the nations is worldwide economic collapse and war between the nations. From the economic collapse and war between the nations will reorganize into one world government with one world currency. That's the fulfillment of Revelation in chapter 13. And as these events are happening, it is the designated time that the God of Israel will end the exile of the 12 tribes of Israel, and Ephraim and Judah will be united in the land of Israel, fulfilling the prophecy of Ezekiel in chapter 37, verses 15 through 28. Have a very important update this week, where we're going to focus on two main issues: the current status of the Israeli-Palestinian peace process and the current situation with the U.S. economy, paying particular interest to what is happening with the U.S. dollar. From this week's developments, it looks like the probability is increasing that the nations may decide to go to the United Nations to have the United Nations recognize the borders of a PLO state with East Jerusalem as its capital. And the Palestinians in the Arab League are calling for this to happen if there cannot be an agreement on the continuation of direct talks here in the next month. In order for those talks to continue, the Palestinians want to see a complete building freeze in Judea, Samaria, or as the Western world refers to it, the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And in the last day or so, Israel has announced that they will be building in a couple communities located in East Jerusalem, wherein the United States, France, and others have voiced their displeasure with that announcement. Now, if we do see the United Nations recognizing a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital, it would be without the approval of the government of Israel. And if we see this happen, then with hindsight, we could interpret the prophecy of Isaiah in chapter 28 and Daniel 9 according to the following manner. If we see that the nations of the world will, through the UN, recognize a Palestinian state, this is not and has not been the preference of the United States. But if the United States gives up on the direct talks, they may be willing to consider it, as there are 5 permanent members on the UN Security Council. They would be the United States, Britain, France, Russia, and China. They all have vetoes. And as of now, Britain, France, Russia, and China would be in favor of recognizing a Palestinian state in the borders with East Jerusalem as its capital. The United States has been unwilling to do that for many years. But if the United States decides to change its mind, then it could happen. Now, in Isaiah in chapter 28 and verses 14 and 15, it says, "Wherefore hear the word of the Lord, you scornful men that rule this people which is in Jerusalem, because you have said, we've made a covenant with death and with hell, and we are at agreement. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through it, it will not come upon us, for we've made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves." And then it says in verse 18, "And your covenant with death shall be annulled, and your agreement with hell will not stand." And so, if the nations of the world do decide, and if the United States does decide to recognize a Palestinian state in its borders through a UN Security Council resolution, then it would happen after the November midterm elections, but it would have to happen before we get into the 2012 election season. So it would have to happen in the next 6 months, according to how U.S. politics would work and play out. And if that happens, in hindsight, I would interpret Isaiah chapter 28, verses 14 and 15 and 18, that the covenant with death was the Oslo Accords in 1993 that got annulled. And the current negotiations have as a foundation the Oslo Accords, but there's not a direct reference being made now to the Oslo Accords, because if Isaiah 28 verses 14 and 15 and 18 does refer to the Oslo Accords, then perhaps Daniel in chapter 9 and verse 27, where it says, "And he will confirm the covenant with many for 1 week." The word confirm is the Strong's number 1396. It is the Strong's number 1396. And I'll share with you the Hebrew word for that. It is the Hebrew word gabor, which means to make strong. So it actually says, he will make strong the covenant with many. And so this may be a reference that the nations of the world themselves make strong the original desires of Oslo by endorsing a Palestinian state and its borders. And ultimately, in order for the prophecies of the land of Israel being divided, Joel chapter 3, verse 2, and the city of Jerusalem being divided through a PLO state, it would have to come about in one of two ways. Either Israel agrees to that state and makes a peace agreement with the Palestinians, or it could be fulfilled that it would be mandated through the United Nations. And so we're going to look at the developments going back to February to see if indeed there may be a backdoor agreement between the United States and the Palestinians to recognize a Palestinian state through the United Nations. And first, I want to share with you an article that was written by Aaron Klein. It was originally posted on February the 23rd, and the headline is that the White House is on board for a Palestinian unilateral statehood threat. And the article says, recent meetings between the Obama administration, the Palestinian Authority, revealed the White House is on board a Palestinian threat to unilaterally ask the United Nations to recognize a Palestinian state outside of negotiations with Israel, a senior Palestinian negotiator told WorldNet Daily. The negotiator further claimed that the entire European Union leadership has backed the plot. WorldNet Daily previously reported, that would be back in December of 2009, that the Palestinian Authority chief negotiator Saab Erekat headed a team that held a series of meetings in December of 2009 with members of the Obama administration in the United States to discuss the U.S. response should the Palestinians bring to the U.N. Security Council a resolution to unilaterally create a Palestinian state. The U.S. position is less restrained than what it appears in the media, a Palestinian official told WorldNet Daily in December, referring to media claims that the U.S. would veto any such resolution. Yesterday, a senior Palestinian negotiator stated the Obama administration still has not threatened to veto the conceptual unilateral resolution and even indicated the U.S. would support such a resolution. The U.S. prefers a negotiated settlement but indicated they would back the resolution if talks don't progress, the Palestinian negotiator said. The official also said the U.S. supports the creation of a Palestinian state in the 67 borders, meaning the Gaza Strip, West Bank, and eastern sections of Jerusalem. Now, in the spring, there was an agreement for a four-month period of indirect talks, and those indirect talks started on May the 9th. So 4 months would go May, June, July, August, September the 9th. And at the beginning of September, the indirect talks became direct talks that were launched on September the 2nd. So why was the time frame of indirect talks 4 months? Why not 6 months? Why not 9 months? Why the number four? Is it possible that 4 months took us into the September time frame, wherein if there could be an agreement on a Palestinian state in September, October, Obama would be in favor of that, as that would be prior to the November elections. However, if the talks failed, then we're right up against the November elections, where following the elections, he could put pressure upon Israel in a hard-handed approach and wouldn't have to face the consequences given the elections are over. So now we have a follow-up article from Haaretz on May the 3rd. May the 3rd, and the headline is the U.S. vows to assign blame if Israel-Palestinian talks fail. The United States government has committed to playing a role in indirect talks between Israel and the Palestinians and promised that if the talks were to fail, the U.S. will assign blame and take action, according to a document sent by the United States to the Palestinian Authority, which Haaretz obtained on Friday. The U.S. government sent the document to the Palestinians responding to their inquiries regarding the U.S. initiative to launch indirect talks between Israel and the Palestinians. We expect both parties to act seriously and in good faith. If one side in our judgment is not living up to our expectations, we will make our concerns clear and we will act accordingly to overcome that obstacle. It was written. So with this promise that the United States made to the Palestinians in May, in addition to the December 2009 meetings where the Palestinians put forth the possibility that if talks failed, whether the United States would agree to recognizing a Palestinian state in the borders through the United Nations, is this the reason why the Palestinians took a hardline stance during the indirect and recently the direct talks to purposely cause the talks to fail, so that the U.S. would have to act upon these pledges? Was there some type of a backdoor agreement between the United States and the Palestinians that got somewhat formalized through written documents and agreements that I just shared with you. The answer to that question will come in November and in December. We need to keep an eye out for it. But when the United States said in May that they will assign blame if the talks fail, the Israeli government just announced that there would be building of homes that will take place in East Jerusalem in areas that the United States, in areas that Israel intends to keep as a part of any possible future peace agreement with the Palestinians. And so this article is from October 15th, the Jerusalem Post. The headline is, "The United States says building in East Jerusalem is contrary to efforts to resume negotiations." Israel announces plan for 4,000 housing units. 240 is beyond the green line, which is the 67 borders. And Egyptian foreign minister says if building continues, the Arab countries may seek UN recognition of a Palestinian state without Israel's approval. The U.S. expressed disappointment Friday at the 240 new housing units reportedly approved in Ramot in Pisgat Ze'ev. "We were disappointed by the announcement of new tenders in East Jerusalem yesterday. It is contrary to our efforts to resume direct negotiations between the parties," said State Department spokesman Philip Crowley to assembled reporters at a weekly briefing. Meanwhile, Netanyahu said he was willing to offer a settlement freeze if the Palestinians would recognize Israel as a Jewish state. This is from October the 11th, from Haaretz. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu offered money to halt settlement construction if the Palestinians were to recognize Israel as a Jewish state, but the Palestinian leadership was prompt to reject the proposal. "If the Palestinian leadership will say unequivocally to its people that it recognizes Israel as the homeland of the Jewish people, I will be ready to convene my government and request further suspension," Netanyahu said while speaking at the opening of the third session of the 18th Knesset. "Just as the Palestinians expect us to recognize their state, we expect reciprocal treatment," said Netanyahu. "This is not a condition, but a trust-building step which would create wide-ranging trust among the Israeli people who have lost trust in the Palestinians' will for peace over the last 10 years. Mahmoud Abbas responds by saying, "We will never sign an agreement recognizing Israel as a Jewish state." From the Jerusalem Post, October the 15th. "Any peace agreement which requires the Palestinians to recognize Israel as a Jewish state or an exchange of land is out of the question," Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas said Friday. In a Ramallah meeting with Hadash Party Knesset members, Abbas said that it was now up to Israel to recognize a Palestinian state with 1967 borders and that the Palestinian Authority had already recognized Israel back in 1993. That's the Oslo Accords, thus negating the need for any further acknowledgement. Well, Abbas just said, from what I shared with you, that even an exchange of land is out of question. Previously, when negotiations took place with Ehud Olmert, the Palestinians said they were willing to exchange land. Next article from Haaretz, October the 13th. Palestinian chief Yasser Rabo says, "We will recognize Israel if Israel returns to 67 borders." Senior Palestinian Liberation Organization official Yasser Rabo said on Wednesday that the Palestinians will be willing to recognize the State of Israel in any way that it desires if the Americans would only present a map of the future Palestinian state that includes all of the territories captured in 1967, including East Jerusalem. In response to U.S. State Department spokesman Philip Crowley's statement on Tuesday night that the Palestinians should respond to the Israeli demand, Rabo told Haaretz, "We want to receive a map of the state of Israel, which Israel wants us to accept. If the map will be based on the 67 borders and will not include our land, our houses in East Jerusalem, will be willing to recognize Israel according to the formulation of the government within the hour, said Rabo. Rabo continued, it is important for us to know where are the borders of Israel and where are the borders of Palestine. Any formulation the Americans present, even asking us to call Israel the Chinese state, we will agree to it as long as we receive the 67 borders. We have recognized Israel in the past, that is in the Oslo Accords, but Israel has not recognized the Palestinian state. Next article, October the 14th, from PressTV.ir. The headline is, Declare an Independent Palestinian State. Mustafa Barghouti called on the Palestinian Authority on Wednesday to immediately declare an independent, democratic Palestinian state, including all the territories occupied by Israel during and after the Six-Day War in 1967, with East Jerusalem as its capital. Speaking to reporters in Ramallah, Barghouti proposed a set of initiatives to surpass the intractable impasse in the so-called peace process. The Palestinian National Initiative leader described the U.S.-backed direct negotiations as meaningless and damaging given Israel's continued settlement construction in the occupied West Bank. He said the declaration would call on all states, governments, and international institutions to recognize the Palestinian state and its borders immediately. And he would call on the United Nations General Assembly to issue recognition of the state based upon the UN-drawn borders of June the 4th, 1967. The document would also urge the General Assembly to demand that the Israeli regime end the occupation of its land, borders, airspace, and water resources and remove all illegal settlements from Palestinian territories. Barghouti further called for punitive action against Israel should it continue its occupation of the Palestinian state following the declaration of the state. Next article from the Jerusalem Post, October the 15th. The headline is, The Arabs may ask the United Nations to recognize a Palestinian state. Arab nations may seek UN recognition of a Palestinian state if Israel continues to build settlements in the West Bank, Egypt's foreign minister said Friday. Ahmad Geet said an Arab League request to the United Nations may come in November. Meanwhile, France's foreign minister says that France cannot rule out the UN creating a Palestinian state. French Foreign Minister Bernard Kouchner said Sunday that the option of the UN Security Council creating a Palestinian state cannot be ruled out. Kouchner told the Palestinian newspaper Al Ayam that France preferred a two-state solution be negotiated with Israel, but said appealing to the Security Council to resolve the conflict remained a possibility. We want to be able to soon welcome the state of Palestine to the UN. This is the hope and the desire of the international community, and the sooner that can happen, the better, he said. The international community cannot be satisfied with a prolonged deadlock. I therefore believe that one cannot rule out, in principle, the Security Council option, he said. But the establishment of the Palestinian state must come as a result of the peace process and be the fruit of bilateral negotiations. So pressure is going to be upon the United States to agree to this if there cannot be a resumption of direct talks, which would be brought about by Israel agreeing to a settlement freeze in the next several weeks as we head into November. So that summarizes the current situation with the peace process. The United States had previously said that they may be willing to recognize a Palestinian state through the United Nations. They will assign blame if talks fail, and they now can assign blame since Israel has announced 240 new housing units in East Jerusalem. Netanyahu says if the Palestinians will recognize Israel as a Jewish state, we can have a settlement freeze. But Mahmoud Abbas said we will never recognize Israel as a Jewish state, but Israel must return to the 67 borders. And so senior Palestinian officials are now stating, in addition to the Arab League, that if direct talks don't continue in the next month, they want to ask the United Nations to recognize a Palestinian state. And France says we can't rule this out. So I believe something is going to give, one way or the other, between now and the end of 2010. We will have to watch and see exactly what happens, but I believe something has to happen as we are in the crossroads of the process. So now the next and the last thing and the last topic I want to share with you is the current situation with the U.S. economy and particularly the U.S. dollar. And Lindsay Williams reported at the beginning of 2010 that in 12 months or so, there was a plan to devalue the dollar by 30% to 50%. It appears now, as of a couple weeks ago, the Federal Reserve is given every indication that they want to see a weaker U.S. dollar, which means setting the conditions for the devaluing of the U.S. dollar. And the reason that the Federal Reserve is giving is that the U.S. economy is weak. So the first article is from MSNBC.com, October the 14th, where Realty Track reports that foreclosures for the July through September time frame set a new record for a three-month period. The article says lenders seized more U.S. homes this summer than in any three-month stretch since the housing market began to bust in 2006, but many of the foreclosures may be challenged in court later because of allegations that banks evicted people without reading the documents. A total of 288,345 properties were lost to foreclosure in the July through September quarter, according to data released Thursday by RealtyTrack, a foreclosure listing service. That's up from nearly 270,000 in the second quarter, the previous high point in the firm's records dating back to 2005. Banks have seized more than 816,000 homes through the first 9 months of the year, and they've been on pace to seize 1.2 million by the end of 2010. But fewer are expected now that several major lenders have suspended foreclosures and sales of repossessed homes until they can sort out the foreclosure documents mess. On Wednesday, officials in 50 states and the District of Columbia launched a joint investigation into the matter. The next article is from the British Independent, October the 13th. The headline is, "The Great American Mortgage Crisis Deepens." The article says, which word to choose? Chaos? Debacle? Scandal? Perhaps even crisis? Just when you thought the U.S. housing market epicenter of the earthquake that collapsed the world's financial system 2 years ago had stopped causing us all problems, it is time to pay attention again. Because after the subprime mortgage mess, now we have the American foreclosure rasco. Around 7 million Americans are now either not paying their mortgages at all or seriously behind in their monthly payments. That's about 1 in 7 of all residential mortgage borrowers. But that is not the surprising issue. This remains largely in line with the predictions that were made at the onset of the credit crisis when it became clear lenders had been foisting unsuitable loans on indigent borrowers for years. The surprising issue is this. The lenders and their agents have messed up the paperwork in truly heroic fashion. What ought to be a simple process, taking back the home used as collateral for a loan that is no longer being paid, has in fact turned into a legal quagmire as each day brings forth revelations of fraud, cutting corners, and shoddy treatment of homeowners. The ultimate outcome is difficult to predict. Today, attorneys generals from some 40 states will be in together to launch a formal investigation of the mortgage servicing industry, which processes foreclosures. Bank of America, one of the top four lenders in the United States, has halted all repossessions while it tries to work through the mess. And numerous other players have also stopped the foreclosure process in some or all of the country's 50 states. The White House yesterday rejected the idea of imposing a national moratorium on foreclosures, partly because the mortgage market is regulated at the state rather than the federal level, partly because the unintended consequences are scary. But that hasn't stopped a slew of other politicians demanding such a halt. Once again, public anger is stirred against the banks. Meanwhile, an article from Yahoo News, October the 15th, is the U.S. government reported the fiscal year 2010 budget deficit $1.3 trillion. The Obama administration said Friday the federal deficit hit a near record $1.3 trillion for the just completed budget year. That means the government had to borrow 37 cents out of every dollar it spent as tax revenues continued to lag while spending on food stamps and unemployment benefits went up as joblessness neared double-digit levels in a struggling economy. The administration is projecting that the deficit for the 2011 budget year, which began on October the 1st, will climb to $1.4 trillion. Over the next decade, it will total $8.5 trillion. Now, currently with the $14 trillion recognized federal deficit and it being projected and admitted that it would go up another $8.5 trillion in the next 10 years. Let's say if they are accurate in their prediction, which usually they're low, that would mean $22 trillion federal debt. Now, if that debt was financed at 10%, that's $2.2 trillion in interest that the federal government would have to pay every year. That is unsustainable. So it is no longer possible for the federal government to pay 10% on interest of the federal debt. And mortgage rates is tied to the interest that is paid on the 30-year government bond. And so you wouldn't expect interest rates to go up to 10% without it crashing the U.S. economy. Well, what if interest rates was 5% financing the debt? At current debt of $14 trillion, that would be $700 billion if no more debt is added. But the government says another $1.4 trillion will be added in 2011. So projected out 10 years and $22 trillion federal debt at 5%, that is $1 trillion in interest. That is unsustainable. So, therefore, we are approaching a point in the process where sustaining the debt becomes unsustainable, and we barely will be able to afford 5% interest rates on the 30-year bond. So right now, the government is financing the debt between 1 to 3%. And the Federal Reserve is saying that they want to print money to increase inflation because inflation is too low. But if inflation increases to 3 to 5% and interest rates have to go to 5-6%, then we won't be able to finance our debt. And so the United States is right now in a precarious financial situation. But the repercussions of 5% inflation is not being discussed, only the need to print money to create more inflation in the name of helping a sluggish economy. So the Federal Reserve has started the process to print money, which is buying government debt, and they're going to announce the magnitude in which they plan to pursue the printing of money from the release of their results of the November 2nd and 3rd meeting that is set to take place. So from the Washington Times, the headline is Fed Chairman Bernanke wrestles with the size of the aid program. The Federal Reserve is prepared to take further steps to rejuvenate the economy by buying treasury bonds, but is wrestling with how big the program should be, Chairman Ben Bernanke said Friday. Bernanke also indicated that Fed policymakers are trying to craft a plan to lift inflation from super low levels. He made his remarks in a speech delivered to a Fed conference in Boston. Bernanke said the Fed must weigh the risk of a treasury buying program and determine how the debt purchases would be paced. The Fed's bond purchases would be intended to lower long-term interest rates to stimulate buying and spending and help lower unemployment. But if it creates inflation, it's not going to lower long-term interest rates. It will increase long-term interest rates. Fed policymakers are widely expected to announce a treasury buying program at their next meeting November the 2nd and 3rd. Bernanke said there would appear, all else being equal, that there is a case for the Fed to take further action and print money and buy government bonds. Wall Street Journal article from October the 13th said that the Fed is now being viewed as trying to devalue the dollar. The Federal Reserve minutes released Tuesday left currency investors with two takeaways. The U.S. officials are determined to push the dollar lower, and the international community will continue to complain about it. The minutes, which showed surprising broad support among Fed policymakers for a stimulus effort, erased a mild bounce the dollar enjoyed. Meanwhile, Singapore raised their interest rates. And from MarketWatch, October the 14th, the headline is, "The dollar tumbles on heels of a Singapore rate hike." The dollar tumbled Thursday to its lowest level since December against several major currencies after Singapore's central bank surprised markets by effectively tightening monetary policy. The move highlighted the contrast between countries more quickly recovering from the global slump and the U.S., where the Federal Reserve is expected to soon undertake another round of bond buying, devaluing the dollar. The dollar sell-off was widespread. The euro hit the highest in nearly 9 months against the dollar, which fell to a new 15-year low versus the Japanese yen and an all-time low against the Swiss franc. The Canadian dollar rose to parity with the U.S. dollar for the first time in 6 months, while the Australian dollar rose to its highest level against the U.S. dollar since the early 1980s. The dollar index, which is a measure of the U.S. dollar against a basket of major global currencies, which is highly weighted toward the euro, fell to a reading of 76.6, down from 77.06 in late North American trading Wednesday. And this is a level that's a critical level for the dollar. As one other time, the dollar went to as low as 72, but several times it has dropped down to the 77 level. And the dollar index has dropped from 85 to 77, which is about a 10% drop in the last few months. And there's been a large drop in the last several weeks of the value of the dollar against major international currencies, which caused an analyst from CNBC.com to say that the dollar's drop is unprecedented. The headline is, "The scale of currency moves are unprecedented. The scale of the swings in the currency markets is unprecedented, looking at how quickly the dollar has declined in the last month." Derek Halpenny, European head of Global Currency Research Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi, told CNBC Thursday, "The market has been to-ing and fro-ing from one theme to the next," Halpenny said. On September the 13th, just one of the 45 banks were predicting the euro to top $1.40 over the next 12 months. So on September the 13th, a little over a month ago, only one in 45 banks was predicting the euro to top $1.40 to the dollar in the next 12 months. But it has now happened in 30 days, as this week. The euro traded at 140. And a month ago, the euro was about 127 to the dollar. And so the dollar has lost 10% value against the euro in 1 month, causing this analyst to say that that move is unprecedented, or it is sharp. The next article, from the financialpost.com, October the 14th. The headline is, "Singapore hits the dollar and the United Nations warns of a currency war." Singapore widened the trading ban for its currency in response to rising market volatility, and South Korea exchanged barbs with Japan as foreign exchange tensions persisted ahead of a G20 meeting next week. The dollar under pressure for weeks on expectations the U.S. Federal Reserve will soon print money again to bolster its faltering economy fell sharply against a range of currencies on Thursday after the surprise move by Singapore. Emerging market governments are in a policy bind because of an influx of footloose global capital seeking higher returns from the near-zero interest rates on offer in the developed world, which is driving their currencies up and threatening their export bases. The flows are exacerbating imbalances that policymakers fear could stall a recovery from the deep downturn caused by the global financial crisis and could even lead to a wave of protectionist policies which would wreak further damage. Verbal jousting from policymakers has intensified in the run-up to a meeting of a group of 20 finance ministers in South Korea next week and a leaders' summit in South Korea on November the 11th and 12th. The United Nations Conference on Trade and Development warned that a recovery in global investment was now threatened by the specter of a currency war. "We have seen recent fluctuations of major currencies in a significant manner. There is a danger of a currency war," said James Zahn, director of the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development. The next article is from the London Telegraph, October the 10th. The headline reads, "Currency wars are necessary if all else fails." The article says, "Asian investment in plant has run ahead of Western ability to consume. The debt-strapped households of Middle America or Britain and Spain can no longer hold up the dysfunctional edifice." Asians must take over or it will come down on their own heads. The countries actively intervening in exchange markets to suppress their currencies, that would be China, Japan, Korea, Thailand, even Switzerland, to name a few, are all too often the same ones who have the biggest trade surpluses with the United States. They are taking active steps to prevent America extricating itself from the worst unemployment since the Great Depression, now 17% in the latest U6 index. Each country is doing so for understandable reasons. Japan, to avoid a deflationary crisis. China, to hold together a political order that is more fragile than it looks. In both these cases, they are trapped because they clung too long to a mercantilist export strategy, failing to wean themselves off American demand when the going was good. Yet this is an intolerable situation for the U.S. It should be no surprise that the United States has begun to retaliate in earnest, and not just by passing the Reform for Fair Trade Act in the House that hasn't yet passed the Senate, clearing the way, if it would pass, for punitive tariffs against currency manipulators. The atomic bomb, of course, is the Federal Reserve printing money. America has in effect issued an ultimatum to China and the G20. Either you stop the predatory behavior and agree to some formula for global rebalancing, or we will deploy printing money to flood your economies with excess U.S. dollars. We will cause you to overheat, drive up your wage costs. We will impose a de facto currency revaluation by more brutal and disruptive means, and there is little you can do to stop it, so pick your poison. So this article from the London Telegraph is really indicating that the Federal Reserve is not doing this to save the U.S. economy. It is a part of a war, particularly against China, that China is not economically doing what the United States wants it to do. So the United States is going to create crisis to try to cause the international community to behave like the United States wants it to behave. So ultimately, why would the Federal Reserve be doing these policies which will and risk the destabilization of the U.S. dollar in the international system? It's because this crisis and destabilization of the U.S. dollar is necessary to bring about one world currency and international reform to make a framework for that international currency. So October the 10th from World Debt Daily, this is the last article for today's update, 420 banks demand a one world currency. The Institute of International Finance, a group that represents 420 of the world's largest banks and finance houses, has issued yet another call for a one world global currency. Jerome Corsi's Red Alert reports. A core group of the world's leading economies need to come together and hammer out an understanding. Charles Dallara, the Institute of International Finance's managing director, told the Financial Times. An IIF policy letter authored by Dallara and dated October the 4th made clear that global currency coordination was needed in the group's view to prevent a looming currency war. The narrowly focused unilateral and bilateral policy actions seen in recent months, including many proposed and active measures on trade, currency, intervention, and monetary policy, have contributed to worsening underlying macroeconomic imbalances, Dallara wrote. They have also led to a growing protectionist measures as countries scramble for export markets as a source of growth. Dallard encouraged a return to the G20 commitment to utilize International Monetary Fund Specialist Drawing Rights. The International Monetary Fund Special Drawing Rights, which is the basis for one world currency, to create an international one world currency alternative to the U.S. dollar as a new standard of foreign exchange reserve. So the question is, has the Federal Reserve started a policy that will lead to the collapse of the U.S. dollar, devaluing of the U.S. dollar, with the desired purposeful intent of creating the conditions for the world to call for and for the governments of the world to accept a one world currency that would be issued through the International Monetary Fund? It's quite possible that this process has started. And so when we have the full manifestation of the effect of this policy, which has now started, and the Federal Reserve will tell us November the 2nd and 3rd exactly to what degree will be the policy that I believe it will lead to the collapse of the dollar, hyperinflation, and the devaluation of the U.S. dollar, and a collapse of the international economic system. And when that actually does happen, I believe that it would be a tribulation event. And so the things which would create the condition for it to happen has started. And so therefore this could indicate to us that we are not very far from affirmation of being in the tribulation. Now, because the dividing of the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem is a tribulation event as well, if the United States would decide that agreement based upon direct talks cannot succeed, and if they are willing to agree to recognize a Palestinian state in the borders through a UN Security Council resolution, which the Palestinians and the Arab League are going to ask for this to happen as we come into November and December. If the U.S. agrees to do this, this would be the dividing of the land and would indicate a tribulation event. And the dividing of the land is associated with the judgment of the nations, war between the nations, and economic collapse. And we have the conditions for that economic collapse as well. So we could see from these events, depending upon how they play out as we head into the rest of 2010 and the beginning of 2011, that these events could confirm that we would be at the beginning of the tribulation. So exactly how they do play out, only time will tell. But we will continue watching the events and giving you a report on them, as there's a mandate that there are watchmen on the walls of Jerusalem, Isaiah in chapter 62. And the watchman is commanded to sound the shofar when he sees something that the people of God need to be aware of, Ezekiel 33 and verses 1 through 7. And the watchman will also cry, "Let us go up to Zion," Jeremiah in chapter 31 and verse 6. And so, until we share with you another 5-minute update, we pray that this one has been helpful to you to see the direction of current events as it relates and pertains to the fulfillment of Bible prophecies of the end of days. Until we do it again, shalom in Yeshua the Messiah. Amen.